Welcome back. The risk on mood and markets extended to cryptocurrencies earlier today, though that enthusiasm has come down a bit this 3 p.m. hour of trading. As we can see, Bitcoin prices are now back below the $39,000 level after nearing the $40,000 level at today's highs. And recall that yesterday prices for the largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization had fallen below $35,000. Now, taking a look at some of the other major cryptos, Ethereum still trading higher by about 0.4 percentage points, trading just below that $2,700 mark. Litecoin also trading slightly higher, whereas we have Solana as well as Dogecoin trading in the red this afternoon. But we'll continue to bring you updates on the crypto space as we track today's stock market rally as well.
All right. Well, for a deeper dive into crypto and its role in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, I'm joined by Jason Williams, Bitcoin hard money you can't F with author. Thank you for joining us today. Now, as we've seen crypto donations pouring in to organizations and individuals supporting Ukraine's military, what does this say about how far crypto has come? And how do you think traditional financial institutions are really viewing this?
Yeah, you know, I think that crypto is pretty agnostic to this. So you may see Russia use cryptocurrency to circumvent sanctions, as an example, bypass some control points. You're also seeing crypto being used to fund Ukraine and their army and resistance. So it's a really interesting landscape when you step back and you look at crypto's role right now.
Now, another thing we're seeing, of course, cyber attacks. We're seeing those being reported by Ukrainian officials amid this conflict. Talk about the role of decentralized power applications in securing the grid.
Yeah, you know, in the United States in particular, we have a legacy, kind of an older, antiquated grid. And decentralized power, when you look at hydro, solar, wind, geothermal, waste energy even, those are ways to protect the legacy grid and make it more robust. You see the same thing happening all over the world. When you think about cyber attacks, EMPs, direct attacks on facilities, it's certainly a concern. And during times of crisis like this, infrastructure are primary targets. So losing power is a bad thing. And having decentralized power that's either interconnected in the grid or directly connected to a parasitic load that's needed locally, just makes the grid more robust.
And to that point, I mean, we've seen crypto roaring back in early trading, but then we see it has waned a little bit. Still, though, tracking what we're seeing with equities. Now, most crypto-related stocks are also doing somewhat better, but still not as well as the tokens. What should investors read into that?
Yeah, I think in the last 24 hours, you've seen the market cap of cryptocurrency down to $1.57 trillion. That's almost a 10% drop, but it's rebounded a bit. This is a very volatile asset class. Some call it a store of value, watching the price drop from a high of 69,000 recently all the way down to its present price. It doesn't feel like much of a store of value. This is a very interesting moment where there's an alternative to fiat currency, and you're seeing it play out. So as a student of life, as a student of monetary policy, and a participant in living on the planet today, it's kind of really interesting to watch.
And I know a lot of retail investors probably looking and wondering, is this my opportunity to come in? How do some of these newer retail investors navigate the opportunities here without getting burned as much as they can?
Yeah, so Bitcoin in particular has been kind of range bound and moving sideways a bit. So a lot of us that watch the price and have a high time preference to Bitcoin in particular are looking at $47,000 as kind of a momentum moment where you'll see the price probably go up and you'll see momentum buyers come in. The price doesn't break 47,000 and it starts to get below 34. You're going to see value investors start to make a move where you'll see buying around 30,000. So I kind of am watching that, but I don't really trade Bitcoin. I'm a buy and hold. For me, I bought all the local tops and I tried to come back in whenever I can.
Now, I want to shift gears here and talk about regulation. We saw what happened when Canada's federal government tried to put 34 crypto wallet addresses on a list, saying that these exchanges and financial firms weren't to do transactions with them. A lot of users either just switched to a different wallet or a different exchange. What can regulators actually do in situations like this?
With Bitcoin in particular, because of its programmatic monetary policy and its decentralized nature, it's really hard to seize and censor. And I think that's what makes it special and interesting. The more centralized cryptos, I can't really put in the same category as Bitcoin. So what makes that interesting to me, you've seen in our recent history moments where citizens were fleeing their country emergently and they're grabbing things of value. And when they tried to go to the banks were closed. Or they went to ATMs and the lines were long and then the ATMs just ran out of cash. If I was crossing a border with my family and premiumly concerned about safety, I wouldn't want to have a trunk full of gold. I wouldn't want to have a briefcase full of money. I think digital currencies like Bitcoin in particular are very interesting and necessary.
And I want to shift gears and talk about mining now. We know that China went from controlling up to 2/3 of all Bitcoin mining in the world in April of 2021 to not contributing at all as of July of 2021. Talk about the broader impact of China's moves on other domains, as the US now and Kazakhstan now have the biggest mining share by nation.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment. We faced historically a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt around China's influence in the, what you would say, a centralized nature of having all of this cryptocurrency mining capacity in their country. And then in a moment, they banned it. And it happened very quickly. We saw the quantitative effect of that with hash rate and difficulty dropping. So the amount of hash is indicative to the number of computers that are supporting the Bitcoin network. That fell off a cliff when China banned Bitcoin mining. And then something really wonderful and interesting happened if you support Bitcoin. We saw those machines, the infrastructure, get decentralized across the world. It ended up in North America and other countries, as you've just stated. And today, hash is higher at its highest point ever. So we've not only gone through seeing the China flood be dispelled, the decentralization, or dissemination of those computers to many, many countries, but the recovery of hash globally and Bitcoin's network is more secure than it's ever been historically.
And just quickly before we go, as we look at some of the trends, you built the world's first waste-to-energy cryptocurrency mine, which ran mainly on car tires, a creative concept there. But how does that tie into some of these concerns being raised by Congress as they investigate the environmental impact of crypto mining?
Yeah, I think the ESG narrative and Bitcoin's impact on power and the moralization of power is a false narrative. I'm going to be more direct than I normally am since I have your attention today. You know, I think Bitcoin actually is creating a renewable renaissance in regards to energy creation. More than 50%, 60% of the power that's used by Bitcoin miners is renewable. It's using tidal and wind and geothermal and waste and solar. And the reason it does that, it's because it's economically incentivized to drive the cost of power down and increase its profit margin. The lower your operating expenses are and the more efficient your mine is or your business is, the more profit you have. So I think it's a false narrative. It's something used to attack Bitcoin by those who are fearful of it. But I think it's really easy if you sit down and think about and analyze where the power is coming from and how Bitcoin's programmatic monetary policy incentivizes efficiencies and renewables like we do at PRTI, where it's just a play on synthetic polymer science. Or we take recycled tires or used tires, and we recover them through a patented process and make all types of fuels, and we use that to mine Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies.
Well, we certainly saw it work for you, so clearly it could be applicable otherwise. Thank you so much for your insights, Jason Williams there, Bitcoin, hard money you can't F with, author. Thank you so much.